Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Now, I've reminded you in recent weeks that it is officially smack-off season and that you should be looking to qualify for the biggest day of the year in the jungle. Now I've got a place to put it. Consider this your official smack-off announcement. Smack-off 24. That's right. 24 of these things. 24 smack-offs. This thing's nearly as old as Adam Hawk. Smack-off 24 is July 20th. July 20th. Write that down. July 20th. I've said it. It's now official. July 20th. Now, obviously, I can't run this date through everybody who might qualify for the event. So here's hoping that it does sync up with your schedule and your vacation. If not, and if you have a vacation scheduled on that day, don't sweat it. I've thought about that. There is an option. I've given this considerable thought. If for some reason you're on vacation on that day and you've qualified for the field and the show, but you can't participate that day, there is something you can do. Here is what I can offer you. Here is what you can do. You can cancel your vacation because I'm not moving the smack off. You can move your vacation because I'm not moving the smack off. It's July 20th. In the meantime, if you're not calling, but you want to listen and take part on social, put in to get the day off right now. Make that a three-day weekend. Do not get stuck at work, not listening, and not partying right along with it, because this thing is about to turn 24. And it's still breaking ground. 24 in, and for the first time ever, we're going to put it on TV. Now, I can't lie. When I dropped this thing for the first time back, almost a quarter of a century ago, it never dawned on me that one day the Smack Off would be on TV. I wasn't even sure that we'd do a second one, much less 24 total. But here we are. Here we freaking are.
Here we are.
Little background for you, if you don't know exactly what it is. Now listen, I'm pretty self-aware. I know what I'm good at. I know where I'm not as effective. Same thing with you. I know what you are good at. And calling this show is not one of those things. Many of you, most of you, you want to be good at that, you're just not. But there is a small contingency of killers who are. And I used to think to myself, if I could just pick who I wanted to call this show every single day, the show would be so much better than it already is. But that's not pragmatic. That's not realistic. I can't wake up every single morning and say you. But I could do it once a year. I could do it one day out of the year. And that's how the Smack Off was born. One day of nothing but the very best calls, where the best of the best go at it, and they go at each other for the right to be king of smack. You know, for lack of better words, for the right to be the best caller on the best show that I know. Oh, and if you win, you get $5,000. $5,000 cash. The catch is, it is invite only. You have to qualify. You have to actually be in it to win it. You can't just show up day of. You have to qualify. So how do you get in? With quality phone calls. Or even one amazing call. If I'm feeling it on that day and I want to award you with a so-called golden ticket.
I've got a golden ticket.
Past winners get lifetime exemptions. If you've won the event, you can go a year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, without even calling the program, and then show up on the day of the event, if you've won the event. And to be the champ, clearly, you are going to have to beat the champ. In fact, the two-time defending champ, the Laguna Beach Bully, Lef in Laguna, who's pulled off some pretty crazy bleep the last couple of years. I mean, who's going to forget that first call? The first title-winning call when this cat bum-rushed my studio.
If you're listening to the show right now, stop whatever the hell you're doing. If you're driving, pull over. If you're working, stop. I'm about to take this call where no call has ever gone before. This is one small step for a clone and one giant leap for clone kind. That's right. I'm literally standing right outside the O'Reilly Auto Parts studio door. Let's see who's home. We're walking. Oh, KB, nice shorts, bro. You cut those yourself? You're looking good. Alvy, don't you put a bounce house in here? That's awesome. What's up, guys? I'm looking right across the glass, and Jim Rome's staring right at me. I'm going in.
Bro, you got to be kidding me. You're in my house, and you're rocking a Richie Incognito gamer.
You got it, Jimmy.
Lef, what the hell are you doing in my house?
This call's about
How the hell did you get in here, Lef?
Romy, this call's about to get real good for everyone except Brad and Corona.
That was Lef in Laguna Beach 2 years ago. So the guy bum rushes my studio. He actually gets in, gets on the air. So what do you do to top that? What do you do to top that? You dig up an old Sports Illustrated article about the jungle. And you run down virtually everybody, a few of whom I assumed were dead, in the infamous picture within the article, and then have all of them bum rush the same studio with you.
Jim, being a star actor in the jungle just means you're a failed smack runner. Pervy Alvey, OJ killed her, studio Stormy.
Hey, don't go pissing your pants, kid. What the hell happened? You lose your place in a damn script? In my day, we didn't even use scripts.
Well, but aren't you...
Terrence and Sarah Madry. Yeah. So what?
But I thought you were...
Dead? No, legends never die, kid, unless you're Bert Corona. You killed that guy last year. Hey, this is your big chance. I got your back. You know that 1996 Sports Illustrated picture of all those clones with Jim? They all got your back, too, kid. You can count on it.
The 1996 SI photo shoot? I mean, do you mean to tell me that Joe and Lemon Grove, Dave the Mayor and Poway, Rich and Anaheim Hills, Silk, Iray, Trapper, and Jim Benton, the Dottolas, and Raider Mike, all of my back? But I thought they were dead, too.
I told you, kid. Legends never die. Besides, they're not dead. They're just dead from the neck up. They can still walk around and pose for a picture now and then. Come on, now.
Well, Jim, I think that's them walking into the studio right now. You can, like, recreate the 1996 SI photo, Jim. Oh, and there's Sports Illustrated columnist Ben Golliver. He's going to document this whole thing for a new article next month.
All true. And I thought Terrence was dead. Terrence is not dead. So I've got no idea what Lef has in store for this year, but I do know this. He's the one to beat. Write it down, July 20th. You think you're better than that guy? Go ahead and prove it. If you know you're not and you just want to listen or participate on social, get the day off. Now you know when the day is. It's official. Smack Off 24, July 20th. Be there because it is going to be on TV for the first time ever on CBS Sports Network. Write it down. Get the day off. Schedule your vacation around it. July 20th, Smack Off 24. Jason Lockenfora joins us, JLC. The draft is finally over. I know how hard you hit that thing. How does it feel the day after the weekend?
Relief. Relief. I couldn't wait to get out of the house. We went to the Orioles game yesterday, even though it was like 45 degrees. I love the draft. It's a lot of fun. It's obviously become a 24/7, 365-day year cottage industry. But yeah, no more mock drafts for me for another like 363 days. So I'm happy about that.
Jason Lockenfora, my guest. All right, then. So the Browns get their man on top. They get Baker Mayfield. Then they take Denzel Ward with the fourth pick overall. Now that all their picks are in, what does this first draft for John Dorsey tell you about the way he wants to build that team?
Go big or go home. It was all about risk and risk reward and risk management. And they definitely... we're willing to go bold. I mean, Mayfield at one, they're saying we think he's the best quarterback by far. They had their pick of any of them. A lot of people think he would have been available at four. Ward at four, obviously the consensus top corner in the draft, Jim, but at what price? And will he be better than Bradley Chubb? And could you have got him at 12 if you moved down with Buffalo and picked up pick 21? I mean, you could make a scenario not all that far-fetched, where they take a quarterback at four, they trade back to 12, they pick up 21, and then they get Lamar Jackson at 32 because they had, what, picks 33 and 35. So asset management, Callaway, that's a big risk. Could be the best receiver in the class. Could be a guy who gets in a lot of trouble with Josh Gordon and Baker Mayfield in that locker room. The offensive lineman they took at the top of day two. Some I talked to think he'd be there at the top of day three. So John Dorsey didn't care. He was going to build the team his way. He took a lot of risks in Kansas City. Some worked long-term, some worked short-term. And we'll have to see how this plays out. You know, we'll talk again in 3 years, and we'll have a lot better idea about who won and who lost.
The Monday episode of the Daily Jungle is brought to you by Fan Exchange. Yeah, I know. Monday, the worst day of the week. Yeah, why? It's not like they don't play games on Monday. Take tonight, for example. You've got a playoff game in the NBA, two playoff games in hockey, and 11 baseball games. Head on over to fanexchange.com for a safe, easy, and reliable experience. Tickets purchased on Fan Exchange are always guaranteed. You don't have to worry about getting there, getting to the gate, and not getting in. Mondays do not have to suck. Not when Fan Exchange can get you through whatever turnstile you're eyeing tonight. Find the very best seats at the best prices at fanexchange.com. Here's what you need to do. Use the promo code ROME. Promo code ROME and get 50% off the service fees on your next purchase. Is there a host with an easier name to spell? No. So use mine at checkout. Save some cheddar. Thank me later. Fan Exchange. We have tickets. Fan Exchange. Jason Lock informed my guest. When you talk about Callaway, you're talking about Antonio Callaway, who they get in the fourth round. Jason, let me move on. There were rumors about Darius Geis during the draft and the suggestion that TMZ might have a report on him. Based on your reporting and what you know, what was out there about him?
Well, there was a lot of concern. There were character concerns. There were concerns about his ability to interact with others, his ability to be coached. And whatever the, I guess, the end game of this was, or whatever the reality of it was, the perception that there was some gotcha piece coming, I heard from multiple NFL teams that they were hearing this. Now, where it came from and whether it's true, obviously, I don't know. We'll find out in the coming days if anything does come out. I wasn't reporting anything on him personally, but multiple personnel staffs were feeling a sense of trepidation that there might be something about him that we don't know that's going to drop. And this time of year, that alone can have a negative impact. The bottom line is he went to a great situation in Washington where, when healthy, they have a pretty decent offensive line, where they're going to be able to maybe get some run action things opened up because of Alex Smith and his athleticism, even at this stage of his career. And if he plays well, he's going to make a lot of money on his second contract, and whatever he lost, you know, he gains. But I will say this, I don't think he was going in the first round regardless. So this idea that there was this monumental slide because of this, I don't think the Seahawks were taking him regardless of whatever people were hearing Thursday night at that spot. I don't think the Patriots were either. So he was going to go in the second round.
Jason Lockenfora joining us. Jason, the Raiders sent a third-round pick to Pittsburgh for Martavis Bryant. What do you make of that trade for both sides?
It's a win for the Steelers. I mean, they were, if they could have got a four for him, they'd have been really happy. At the end of the day, if he was a true malcontent and they just feel like it's not worth it and he's not going to get another contract here anyway, I think they would have taken a five that moved up based on production. But to get a three, they were doing cartwheels. I mean, that was a no-brainer. And this was John Gruden who made that call. It wasn't some underling. It wasn't GM Reggie McKenzie. It was Gruden who ultimately called the Steelers and hashed this thing out and got it done. Make no mistake, he is ruling that organization in every way, shape, or form. There's still a lot of rumblings that there may be a shakeup. To what degree, I don't know. But certainly there's going to be some changes within that front office. I'm not sure, again, how high that'll rise. But it's something that's been talked about there for quite some time. And John Gruden was another guy willing to go bold. That's very much in his nature, and it played out through this draft. I mean, should he got more than, the third-round pick that he got to move back five spots? I guess it doesn't matter because Colton Miller's somebody they really like, but could they have got more there? Drafting the pass rusher key, I mean, that's another kid, big-time character concerns. If it all pans out, it may be a steal. He might be the second-best pass rusher in the draft. He also might have a 2 or 3 year career, but you know, Gruden's not in this to twiddle his thumbs. He likes action, and there was plenty of action from the Oakland Raiders throughout this draft.
Well, you got a ton of that, all right. Jason Lockenfora joining us, breaking down the draft. Jason, you and I are on the same page when it comes to this one. You raised the possibility that when we look back in a few years, that Arizona trading up for Josh Rosen might be one of the smartest moves in the draft. Why do you like that move so much for the Cards?
Well, I mean, we're talking about, you know, I talk about risk and gamble. This is a mitigated risk. Do you want to think, wait and see if he gets to you at 15? Maybe it happens, maybe it doesn't. But for a third round pick, go ahead and get him. In terms of the most NFL ready right now, a lot of teams I talked to don't have a dog in this fight, who weren't drafting a quarterback, but you evaluate them all, feel like Rosen should be the best one from day one, and maybe over time, the totality of his career, the best pocket passer in this draft. For the Cardinals, I mean, Sam Bradford, what are the odds he gets through November, much less an entire season? Glennon's just a dude to stand there and hold a clipboard. So they had to make this move. They rue the fact they didn't get Mahomes or Watson a year ago. They saw other teams jump up and snag those quarterbacks. They had to get one of these four. I just wonder if over time it's Brandon Bean and the Buffalo Bills, and I've championed a lot of what they've done, but they chose Allen over Rosen. Could have had either one when they moved up to seven. that's something I'm interested to see how it plays out over time. But Rosen, I get the personality. Not everybody's cup of tea, but he may be the best of this bunch.
So why do you think Buffalo made that decision? I mean, are they going to go back to the, well, there are elements, you got to really rip it through the wind and the sleet? Was it because of his personality? Why do you think they took him over Rosen?
Well, I think, you know, the arm strength probably had something to do with it. Not that Rosen doesn't have a strong arm, but, I mean, you talk Allen, it's easy to fall in love with that arm talent. It's easy to fall in love with that body type and even his demeanor. I gave Meatball some of the stuff that came out on his social media, but I understand, you know, he's also a high school kid at that point, and within what context was he making those comments? Regardless, I think it's something that, you know, teams had to at least talk about before they made this move, but they were very comfortable with Josh Allen. And look, the upside is there. If it all comes together for him and he cleans up the footwork and a little bit of decision-making, then you may be looking at a perennial Pro Bowler. But there's others who say you could be looking at Jake Locker. And obviously the Bills, they've done this homework forever, Jim. I mean, they've been working on quarterbacks since before last season started, quarterbacks for this year's draft. They knew they were going to be in this boat to get one. They had their choice of two. You know, he's the one that they went with. And again, nobody knows. I mean, nobody could legitimately sit here and tell you right now which of these four is going to have the best career and how much better it's going to be than the other three.
So let me go to the last one then, because you're the co-host of Be More Opinionated. It's a podcast. You're a legend of Baltimore. You've had a few days, Jason, to think about this. What does the pick of Lamar Jackson in the first round mean for the Ravens and for their future?
Well, I think you have to look at it in a couple of ways. And maybe these two ultimately are tied together. First, you look at it through football. The way the Baltimore Ravens have played offense, and they've been an offensive for the most part on that side of the ball, really even when they were winning Super Bowls. They had an amazing run, with Flacco, the second Super Bowl they won here. But it has been difficult to watch. And fans, frankly, have turned away. And there's empty seats in December for what amount to home playoff games. And people saying, no thanks. We don't want to see 3-yard checkdowns 30 times a game from Joe Flacco anymore to a bunch of puny slot guys. We're over it. And you want to find the absolute polar opposite of Joe Flacco? It's Lamar Jackson. Everything about him is completely different, you know, mind, body, soul, personality, than Joe Flacco. And this market was desperate, begging for something else. And Steve Bisciotti, the owner, knew it. So, yeah, it's about football and maybe getting the best athlete in the draft and a guy who could be a modern-day Mike Vick. But it's also about re-energizing a fan base that had turned them off and saying, we hear you. We're going to try something completely different. And, Jim, he's going to be on the field in September. There's no doubt in my mind there'll be a Lamar Jackson package. When your offense is 31st every year, why not? He's an explosive player. If you cultivate him the right way, the potential is boundless. But they had to do something here different to shake it up, to say, we hear you, and we're going to give you a different product to root for down the stretch. You said the word, future. It's about selling the future, because hope right here in this city about football lately, it's been hard to find.
I love that pick. I love that pick, and I love where they got him. One last stop before I cut you loose, Jason. The draft is over. So what does the market look like for Dez Bryant?
Not great. Not great. I mean, there were some teams, New Orleans for one, who had done a lot of work on him and said, well, if we don't take a wide receiver on the first day or the second day, he's someone who would make sense. Well, they took a kid in the third round. They're very high on him. They're out of it. You know, the Giants, that's where he wants to be with his boy Odell. I'm not sure how much Dave Gettleman's feeling that, but if the price is low enough, I wouldn't rule it out. I look at a team like Seattle, where, you know, Dez knows he's going to go somewhere for the short term. He wants to relaunch himself into the market. So what do? You need a good quarterback and a team that has the chance to win. Well, Seattle has both of those. Green Bay's another team I've heard that he's interested in. Ultimately, somebody's going to sign him. It's not going to be for huge money. But I expect it's somewhere like that where he feels like there's a quarterback he can connect with right away, a team that could make some hay. You know, in Seattle, trading down to take a running back, they passed on Ridley. They passed on DJ Moore. They passed on Hayden Hurst, the tight end who went in the first round. So that may be a fit.
Monday is here, and let me ask you, how many of you got into a car, a boat, an RV, or yanked the chain on a lawnmower this weekend? Pretty much every last one of us did one of those things. Stabil products keep them all running smoothly year after year, providing protection for every engine you own. Every Stabil product is specially formulated to treat each of your vehicles or equipment differently. Whether they're on the road or in the water or in your backyard tool shed, Stabil products have been recommended by over 100 original equipment manufacturers, and they have been used and trusted by consumers for 60 years. Whether for day-to-day use or during long periods of storage, you can rely on Stabil's powerful fuel additives to protect your vehicle or equipment from today's fuels. Visit StabilRadio.com for more info. StabilRadio.com for more info. That's StabilRadio.com. 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 Because something truly amazing happened in Game 7 of the Pacers-Cavs series yesterday. Now, I'm not talking about LeBron going off for 45, 9, 7, and 4 steals, even while battling leg cramps once again, because you knew that was going to happen. And I'm not talking about the Cavs winning, because there was a very good chance that was going to happen. I'm not talking about LeBron maintaining his perfect record of never being eliminated in the first round. No, the truly amazing thing that happened in the Cavaliers' win was that LeBron finally got some help. Not a lot, mind you, but just enough. Incredibly, a few of the scrubs that he's been running with actually bothered to show up, like Tristan Thompson, who was thrown into the starting lineup in a moment of genius or desperation from Ty Lue. He had a double-double. Kevin Love had a few clutch threes. George Hill came back from back spasms to make some key contributions in the second half. I mean, I should be amazed by what I saw from LeBron yesterday, but the amazing thing is, I'm not amazed. I fully expected it. I mean, we're spoiled. Nothing this guy does, even 15 years in, with all those miles, surprises anybody. I mean, if I'm like you, or you're like me, I fully expected at least 40. I fully expected nearly double digits in rebounds and assists. It's completely insane. Not just that he willed and dragged his team through the entire first round, but that everybody knew it was going to happen, and still nobody is surprised. Vic Oladipo was on the other end of that. He was not surprised.
He did what he always does. It's not really shocking. I mean, he's the best in the world. That's what the best does. Now I got to work so I can get on that level.
Good luck, Vic. I mean that sincerely. Good luck. Because I know you're probably out there working right now to get to that level. Except LeBron is on a level that we have never seen before. 33 years old, 15 years in, and he's doing this stuff. And it's not a one-off, but he's doing it nightly. I mean, it's shocking, and then not at all shocking at the same time. I could sit here and talk about him scoring 45 on 25 shots on busted legs when he should have been absolutely gassed. But that to me is not amazing. What's amazing is Tristan Thompson made 5 of 6 shots. Now that's amazing. I mean, I could talk about LeBron leaving the game with cramps, coming back in, and still being absurdly dominant. But I'm more stunned by the fact that Kevin Love and the others did not completely fall apart when LeBron was in the locker room and then on the bench. I could talk about the fact that LeBron is superhuman and that his back must be tired from carrying the entire team into the second round, but I'm still way more surprised that George Hill was able to do anything at all because of his own back. Because LeBron going for 40-plus and nearly having another triple-double is not a shock at all. Everybody knew he had to do that for Cleveland to have a chance. As he said, showing up and dominating like that was, quote, what the doctor called for. And I had to go out and try to make plays, and I did that, end quote. Except the doctors actually called for him to have an IV at the end of the third quarter, but he shook that off. But then again, Tristan Thompson, who finally did show up and not a moment too late, was not surprised at all. Quote, I thought I had a good motor, but his motor is unreal. He's got a Lamborghini motor, end quote. Yo, T, respectfully, I know you played 35 minutes yesterday, and that's cool, but your motor is a lawnmower compared to LeBron's. I mean, there were 3 games in this series that you didn't even bother to take off your warm-ups, so let's not be hyping your motor, much less comparing it to LeBron's motor. However, maybe the most surprising thing of all from yesterday was that LeBron admitted after the game that he was, in fact, tired.
I'm burnt right now. I'm not thinking about Toronto right now until tomorrow. I'm ready to go home. Can we? I'm tired. I want to go home.
You're tired. You want to go home. Of course you're tired, Bron. Anybody would be who had to put an entire team and town on his back and go up and down and play both ends of the floor 40 minutes a night, 7 times. Of course you're tired. Problem with that is it's just not sustainable. The Pacers were tough. The future is bright. But right now, Toronto is better, and it's only going to get tougher for LeBron. That guy had to go with a superhuman effort just to get them out of the first round. There's no way he can do that 3 more times. And despite that unbelievable conditioning and the lengths that he goes to take care of his body, I'm not even sure he can do it 1 more time. But at least he gets the chance, because he went to the locker room at the end of the third quarter and the Pacers had pretty much erased the Cavs' 14-point lead, and it was inevitable that those scrubs that he's been running with were going to implode, cost them the series, and LeBron would have played his last game for the land. So, the shock is not that he showed up the way he did, it's that Tristan Thompson, Kevin Love, and George Hill showed up the way they did. Problem is, these guys can show up like that every single night, and it still won't be enough to get them out of the East. Not unless LeBron can give them 40 and 40 every single night. But even that guy can't do that. For a round, sure. But not 3 more rounds, and maybe not even 1 more round. 1-800-636-8686. Cavalier fans, how hard were you gripping? How hard were you gripping when he went to the locker room with cramps, not the first time that's happened, and he turned that game over to the scrubs that he'd been running with? Incredibly enough, they showed up. Not only did they not cost them that series and another second with the Cavaliers, they may have actually saved it. Gennady Golovkin is my guest. Triple G is in studio. Gennady, it's great to see you. How are you?
Great to see you. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning to you. So it's a fight week. You're stepping into the ring on Saturday night. How are you feeling right now?
I feel great. Right now, my body tough. Just amazing time for me right now.
It is an amazing time for you right now. Now, you live in Santa Monica, but you've been training in Big Bear. What was your camp like, and what's life like up in Big Bear at altitude?
You know, I like Big Bear because this is, first of all, a private gym, and I have 100% focus to boxing. You know, not to family, not to something like, you know, just beach or, I don't know, stores. Like, no, 100% focus to boxing.
You know, I'm struck by this already. You and I have spoke for just a couple of minutes. I mean, outside the ring, you're one of the nicest guys anybody could ever meet. I mean, you can see it right here as you're sitting here. But when you step into the ring, you are in the business of hurting people. This is your business. Are you a completely different person when you step between the ropes? Is there some kind of switch that you can throw? How do you get to that place?
Oh, thank you. You know, yeah, it is my business. Just I understand boxing. Boxing is not a game. This is serious business, you know. Outside, I'm Gennady Golovkin, you know. If I go into the ring, I'm Triple G.
All right, so are we talking about two different people? I mean, am I talking to Gennady Golovkin right now, but in the ring, you're Triple G? What's the difference between these two people?
You know, I understand my situation. I know the boxing is crazy business and crazy sport, just because, you know, just one punch changed life. You know, I have beautiful family. I respect my opponent because, you know, the same position. You know, I understand situation. It's not easy.
But that's really something. When you lay it out like that, one punch can change an entire life. It can change your life. It can change your opponent's life. Do you carry that with you into the ring? That could be a real burden if you let that get inside your head. That's a major responsibility.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, just you going to a ring, you know, just every second is crazy. Every second maybe change life. You know, every second just maybe close your career. You know, just this is very important for me.
Triple G joining me in studio. Now, your life has changed dramatically. You know, if we talk about this fight on Saturday, if I go back a little bit, say we go back 6 years, you were fighting in places like upstate New York, like Connecticut, and to be where you are right now, you're the middleweight champion of the world, you've got endorsement deals with the likes of Jordan and Hugh Blow, you're fighting on HBO. How much pride do you take in the fact that you've come this far this quickly?
Oh, this is amazing. This is a huge time for me. Just first of all, thanks, my partners, my sponsor, you know, just people who support me. It is absolutely amazing time for sport, you know, not just for me, for sport, you know, just if boys or, you know, just fighters like have same style like me, you know, people support him. You know, this is an amazing time.
You know, and I can remember back in the day when Mike Tyson was coming up, I can remember guys like, to go in the ring anyway, you have to be a different kind of guy, right? No matter what. But I can remember Tyson had guys beaten before they actually even started the fight because they were so intimidated. They were so afraid of his punching power. I think I can make a similar argument about you, that there are fighters that, I mean, you're going around trying to offer them fights and they'll say things like, yeah, I'm going to fight Triple G, but not yet. Your promoter has made the point that you've offered them opportunities at the belt, but they don't want the risk. Do you have that sense that guys are afraid of you? And do you think you've beaten some guys even before the fight starts?
Yeah, you know, this is, yeah, right. This maybe this question maybe for promotions. Just, I'm a fighter, I'm a boxer, you know, so I'm ready for anybody. Just, you know, just, I know my style, I know my power, I feel great. If I go into ring, just, I'm different guy. Sometimes for people, this is more business. You know, boxing, some people more want more money or, you know, situation, like different situation. Just my style, I want to, my goal is all the belts in the middle of the division, and it doesn't matter who stay front with me, you know, just I want, if I go into ring, just I know this is my day.
But because of your style, do you feel like you have some guys intimidated? I mean, your style is putting people to sleep. Triple G, that's what your style is. Do you feel like guys are intimidated, and do you sense that fear sometimes when they step in with you?
Yeah, this is not my fault. This is for my coach, you know, Abel Sanchez. Thanks, my coach.
It's not your fault. It's your coach, right? All right. Well, on some level, you can improve your punching power, and on some level, you can't. You just have that. What's it like? Have you ever thrown a perfect punch? A perfect punch? And if so, what does that feel like?
No, if I have distance, if I have good timing, you know, just I know. This is maybe last punch for this fight. You know, maybe, you know, I don't know in fight, more in fight, just in training. Sometimes I try in training, my camp, training camp. Maybe, yeah, maybe a couple punches in fight, like body punch. I remember with Matthew Maclin, you know, I remember with Marco Antonio Rubio, like that.
Can you explain what that feels like? What's it feel like to throw that perfect punch, whether it's a body shot or maybe catch somebody on the jaw? What's it actually feel like? Does it, in a sense, does it feel like nothing at all?
Yeah. Right? I remember just I touched him, just I understand, just that's it. It's finished. Fight is finished.
Once you land that punch, you know it's over. They're not getting up.
Right.
Okay. Now, the camp itself, Gennady's been kind of tricky because you were planning to fight Canelo Alvarez. Then he failed the drug test. Then he claimed it was tainted meat. When you first heard that it was tainted meat and there was a failed test, what went through your mind and what was your reaction?
Wow, first of all, I'm not believing. Just no way. Just, you know, just this is not true. How? Just, you know, he's crazy guy. Just maybe this is biggest fight for boxing. You know, it's coming. Just a lot of money, a lot of people who want to watch this fight. This is for business, for everything, for sport, more for sport. You know, he used drug. Oh, come on. This, you know, this medicals. Terrible medicals, you know, just, it's not correct, you know, this is not respect, this is not respect to sport.
In other words, you're like, are you kidding me? There's no way this is happening,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely, absolutely, just, it's, I'm not believing.
All right, so your reaction just was, I can't believe it, he used a drug. Notice you didn't say, I can't believe it, he came down with some tainted meat. Do you accept the meat explanation? Do you think he ate some tainted beef? Is that why he had a positive test?
Absolutely. You know, just, I'm not believe just this mean, you know, just because, you know, it's different situation. Just people knows he use drugs, you know.
How do you know that? Just, when you say people know, how do you really know?
You know, he's people's, you know, in the action, and I think medicaments after waiting like that, you know, just people said, look his body, you know, this is not normal.
Listen, it's a combat sport, right? I mean, you said to yourself, one punch can change your entire life. You could lose your life in the ring. What do you think about somebody who's using PEDs, performance-enhancing drugs, in a combat sport? Mm-hmm. Do you have an issue with that? Do you want to get into the ring with somebody who is using drugs in a combat sport?
You know, just I'm champ, just I want a clean sport. You know, this is very important for people. You know, this is very important for sport. You know, okay, if people use drugs, like, you know, medicaments, just maybe this is a different situation, different, you know, not for legal. You know, maybe this is more show, you know, like WWE or not legal boxing.
Yeah, it's different. That's not a sport. That's a scripted TV show. Exactly, WWE, you're exactly. Right, it's not boxing. I wonder, so it for show, or do you think he did it because he's afraid of you? Is that why he did it, if in fact he did it, because he's afraid of you?
It's maybe, I don't know. It's not my style. My style, clean sport, you know. I don't know. Maybe.
All right, so final thought then on that. Does that make him a cheater? Is he a cheater?
You know, just not a question for me. You know, just ask him. You know, he every time said he's clean. His test, you know, is not clean. You know, ask him, please.
Fair enough. I'll do that. Yeah. Next time he comes in, fair enough. Let me ask you this. Now, you didn't have to take this fight. You could have waited for him, but it was important for you to maintain this date and to fight on Saturday. Why was that so important for you to fight on that day?
You know, I want to stay activity. Just, you know, this is not my fault, really. Just, I want to fight. I said, hey, Tom, just my promoter, just give me, please, fight. May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, it's a huge day, biggest day maybe for boxing, you know, for people, because everybody watch TV or going to Vegas or, you know, just like that. I tell him, just give me a fight. This is not my problem, you know, if I'm not going to Vegas because, you know, fighting's canceled with Canelo, this Canelo's problem, you know, just I'm ready, I want to fight, just I tell after this situation, just say, hey, Tom, I want to stay activity, just give me fight. He bring right now just Vanes Martirosyan.
Listen, now what about Vanes? Now, you've done the work. You wanted to fight. You wanted to stay active. You didn't want to lose that date. Credit to you. You and I talked about how guys do not want to fight you. Not only is he fighting you, he's fighting you on short notice. What's that say about Vanes' heart and his courage that he would take that fight on short notice?
Yeah, I remember him, you know, 2004 in the Olympics game in Athens. I meet him. This time he's best boxer from United States. You know, he come to Olympic and I saw a couple fights. You know, I believe, you know, I know him, just I know his team, you know, he's huge. He has a huge team, like huge mix, UFC, because he's coach, you know, training Ronda Rousey before, you know, just a lot of people who stay with him, you know, great people, strong team. He's a great fighter, you know, nice boxing IQ, like everything. This is a good fight for people. It's just
Triple G joining me in studio. This fight's coming up this weekend. I think you try to make the point that somebody might say, I'm not going to say this to you. Somebody might say, what's the big concern? It's not that tough a fight. I know you respect everybody you get in with. You have a higher respect for his skill level and the style that he brings to it, right? This is not an easy fight.
Absolutely. This is not an easy fight. I believe this is maybe huge fight, huge event, maybe give big gift to people because like special day, Cinco de Mayo is coming. I believe we have this maybe first step this year and second step much bigger.
Let me ask you this. Now this is your job. You are a fighter. You will look for a date. You will execute your job. But the numbers are starting to stack up now. Now, if you fight and you win Saturday night, you tie Bernard Hopkins with 20 consecutive straight title defenses. Gennady, that's a really big number. That's history right there. If you make history, what would that mean to you with that number?
Maybe I'm not understanding 100% right now. Just, you know, just my coach and my team said, hey, this is a lot of fights. You know, these huge numbers and you know, for your career. Yeah, I believe this everything is possible for me.
It's a big number. I'm going to say it if you won't. That's a big number. Have you got a prediction for Saturday night? Are you expecting a knockout Saturday night? How do you think this fight's going to go?
I don't know. Just I'm not God. I don't know. You know, nobody knows. Oh, you know, just not I promise I bring amazing show, amazing event, because this is a huge fight for us. This first step, good opponent, you know, Cinco de Mayo. It's a beautiful day for us.
This fight's coming up on Saturday. It's live on HBO. It's at 11 p.m. Eastern. He is defending his title for the 20th time. The middleweight champion of the world joining us here in studio, Gennady Golovkin. You know, Gennady, you and I have done this before on the phone, but never in person. It is really nice to meet you. I appreciate you taking the trip to come down here and do it live in studio. Extremely well done. Nice to see you.
Nice to see you. Thank you very much.
Now, the city of Philadelphia is straight living its best life. It just is. You tell me a hood where you'd rather be right now. You tell me a hood that you'd like better or you'd rather rep right now, I'm going to say it's just not true. You're lying. from the Eagles run to the Nova Championship to the 76ers second round ticket punch. It has been an electric 3 months for Philadelphia. Let me put this to you another way. How many times has your local law enforcement greased up the light poles in your neighborhood in 2018? Right. Just what I thought. And just when it looked like things could not possibly get any better, David Akers, of all people, rolls into Jerry World and he burns that house to the ground, and he did it on live television. Now, Cowboy fan, don't you dare think that the weekend killed this verbal curb stomping, because it did not. When a kicker body bags an entire city with a troll job for the ages, you best believe it's getting run back on this show the Monday thereafter. However, first, some quick, albeit important, backstory. In 2015, the NFL started moving the draft around after a long run at Radio City Music Hall in New York. Since then, it's been in Chicago, it's been in Philly, and now the Big D. Last year in Philadelphia, you might recall, the Cowboys rolled out former wide receiver Drew Pearson to make their second-round pick in front of a bunch of rabid Eagles fans. In case you forgot, it went something like this.
Please welcome the University of Tulsa wide receiver Drew Pearson.
How about them Cowboys? I want to thank the Eagle fans for allowing me to have a career in the NFL. Thank you. And on behalf of the 5-time world champion Dallas Cowboys, Hall of Fame owner Jerry Jones, T. Jones and the Jones family, Coach Jason Garrett, all the Cowboy players that played before me, that played with me, and played after me, with the second pick and the 60th pick in the second round, the Dallas Cowboys select defensive back from Colorado, Kadobi Awuzie.
You got to admit, that's strong. That is good. A year later, that still cracks me up. Never mind that that team really hasn't done a damn thing since he played there. That's still strong. I mean, thanking a fan base that hates your guts for your entire career is really strong. Strong enough that the Eagles could not wait to counter it this year when they called on David Akers, of all guys, to lob the grenade right back at the Cowboys. But before he got anywhere near the podium in Dallas on Friday night, Pearson caught wind of who the birds tapped for that job, and he was back at it again, and he was not impressed.
A guy named David Akers, a kicker, making a second-round pick, a kicker. You're going to try to match me, come down here and match me with a kicker? I didn't even know those guys were still on the roster. I thought they weeded them out, you know, cost-cutting or something like that, salary cap.
Rest in peace, kickers. Drew Pearson nuked all of them in an attempt to burn David Akers. So right about now, it's impossible to say that Pearson and the Cowboys are not getting over. Impossible to say they're not getting the better of this fight. In fact, the referee looked like he should stop that fight. However, and you might think to yourself, a kicker? Philadelphia, I mean, one of the toughest towns and the world champs. A kicker? But there had to be something there, right? They had to know something about this kicker. Do not sleep on Akers. This dude has not had his turn yet. And just like every great battle rap, or rap battle if you prefer, you don't know what kind of heat this other guy's packing. Not until you've heard him actually take his shot. So, the kicker gets his. Here's David Akers, Philadelphia legend, in Dallas to announce the Eagles' second-round pick on Friday.
What's up, Dallas? I like standing up here before you as an undrafted free agent, representing that shield for 15 years. Tonight, I'm representing the Philadelphia Eagles, NFC East champs, divisional champs, Ha ha ha!
AT&T Stadium, a.k.a. Jerry World, 2009 through 2018, detonated and turned to rubble by the David Akers Demolition Company. Hey, Dallas, the last time you were in a Super Bowl, these draft picks weren't even born? In other words, scoreboard, bitches. And yes, Cowboy fan would love to get into a ring counting competition, but let's go ahead and be real right now. We live in a what have you done for me lately kind of world, and the Cowboys haven't done jack lately. And the Eagles are still street cleaning beer and chewed up horse dung off their parade route. So go ahead, count your Lombardis, Cowboy fan, but don't pretend like a kicker didn't just go into your house and annihilate you, because he did. It's one thing for a wide receiver like Drew Pearson to troll Eagle fans like he did last year, but entirely another for Philly to counter with a kicker and for it to work and for it to get over. Yeah, I admit, it seemed like a curious choice at the time, but they obviously knew exactly what they had in that guy. What a Trojan horse move by Philly. And damn, that team's got some guys who can bring it. That team's got some guys who can bring the fire. First it was Jason Kelce, and now it's David Akers. Do not mess with the birds, because the Cowboys just found out it's going to cost you your dignity. David freaking Akers, if you need him. It's a kicker who just snatched your soul, Dallas. And if you wanted, I'm sure he would have been happy to meet you out in the parking lot afterwards. Even their kickers will go. Pretty amazing. In any other draft, I would say that was the best moment in the draft, but not in that draft. I'll have that for you in a minute. Hey, Avi, can you run that back one more time? A kicker getting up in front of the entire state and taking them down.
I like standing up here before you as an undrafted free agent. Representing that shield for 15 years. Tonight, I'm representing the Philadelphia Eagles.
Those dudes like that one. But then I got to admit, I like that one. The kicker getting up and just letting it rip. Sam Amick. Sam, it is good to have you back. In fact, it's always good to have you on the show. What's up, Sam? How are you?
Romy, doing great. Thanks as always, brother.
Thank you very much, Sam. Great to have you. Now, you were one of the few people on the planet who had the courage to pick against LeBron James and the Cavaliers in Game 7, but you had a very good reason, his supporting cast. So, Sam, what do you make of the way that these guys showed up? The guys, everybody not named LeBron. First of all, let me ask you, what do you make of the way they showed up in the first six games?
It was terrible. I mean, it was arguably the worst supporting cast LeBron has ever seen, which is saying something. You know, as we know, Booby Gibson has become, you know, LeBron's answer to Smush Parker with Kobe. You know, superstar players always have that one guy that kind of epitomizes the fact that they didn't have a ton of help. And so LeBron has been down this road before. But when the Cavs made those trades back in February, I was among that crowd, like a lot of people, that said, you know what, they got younger with Jordan Clarkson and Larry Nance and Rodney Hood and George Hill and athletic and more defensive-minded and a little bit of punch. And I think what we overlooked was that these guys were going to go into the playoffs, you know, extremely green, and they have not been on this roller coaster with LeBron. They have not been part of this story. And so I give Ty Lue a ton of credit. It took a lot of gonads, for lack of a better way of putting it, to go to Tristan Thompson in such an important game. And the theme, obviously, all the way through that one was, you know, it's a matter of trust. You just go with the guys who you've been through that, you know, down that road with before, and they obviously figured it out.
Sam Amick joining us. All right, so a follow-up to that. When you see Thompson and you see him inserted into the lineup last night and he responds the way he did, Sam, with a double-double, does it make you think that maybe Ty Lue has found something, or is that like a one-off, a throwback appearance from Thompson?
Maybe a little bit of prisoner of the moment, recency bias, whatever you want to call it. I'm probably leaning slightly towards, you know, they found something. Tristan is a guy, you know, who his disappearance was a bit of a mystery. It felt like it was just yesterday that he was a major part of that core and a guy who they paid handsomely to do some very important work based on the way they were constructed on that roster. And then it just changed. And then they went down a different road. So I feel like they've found something. You know, this Raptors series is going to be fascinating with all the history that comes with those two teams and the idea that you had the Pacers who were not able to exercise those demons from before. I think it's now 5 out of 6 playoff runs for Indiana that a LeBron team has bounced them and ended their season. And Toronto, as we know, has got a ton of history too. So it's going to be interesting because the Raptors have exactly what the Cavs have lacked, which is the kind of depth and consistency from the guys outside of their stars that has taken them to a different level and had them as a much better team than Cleveland during the regular season. But, you know, I do, to your question, I think the Cavs found something. I think it'll make it a better series.
We're talking to Sam Amick, NBA insider of USA Today Sports, the co-host of the NBA A to Z podcast. I mean, Sam, I guess it shouldn't surprise us that even 15 years in, even at 33, LeBron is still doing amazing things like 45, 9, 7, and 4. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised, but frankly, how long can he keep this up? Could he do this for another entire series or beyond that?
Like I wrote yesterday, Romy, like I guess I'm done betting against him, so I got to answer yes to all those questions. You know, I completely flipped my prediction on this series, and now I'm going with Cavs in 7. So, you know, I'm not going to doubt the guy. It's incredible what he's doing. You know, I do stand by, like I wrote, you know, it's a 5-man game, so it's a lot more complicated than saying that LeBron is going to put on a Superman shirt and go to work. But he's playing incredible basketball, and there is an element of willpower and competitiveness and focus, however you want to identify it. You know, what he is doing on that basketball floor is pretty incredible. And yet again, you know, I feel like I always remind people to appreciate it, enjoy it, make sure you don't get distracted during the game and go pay a bill or run an errand. Like, sit down and enjoy this man and what he's doing, because it's just unbelievable.
Yeah, Sam, I think it's hard to imagine that we're not taking it for granted. Like, you think you appreciate it, but you've come to expect it, you come to accept it. I think that time's going to have to go before we really understand. Like, one day we'll look back and like, damn, did he really do that? Was the guy really doing things like that 15 years in? I don't fully think we respect it at this point. But then I might say the same thing, Sam, about Golden State. They smashed the Pelicans in game one, 123-101. What did Golden State show you in the way they handled New Orleans and the way they did so without Steph Curry?
It was unbelievable. I went down a rare road for me. I was writing my gamer, my game story off that thing, and Jay-Z's at the game, and I pulled a little bit of a trick out. I mean, so Jay-Z's got his famous lyric, you know, allow me to reintroduce myself, and I just thought it was perfect because that's exactly what the Warriors did. I mean, I know they handled the Spurs in the first round. I get it. It was only 5 games. But in terms of being dominant and in terms of looking like the team that probably privately thinks it's hilarious that people have written them off and that people think Houston is the front runner here, that game was the first time in this postseason where they did reintroduce themselves on that level. And defense is where it's starting. They have flipped the switch when it comes to what they're doing now compared to the last couple weeks of the regular season. Klay Thompson playing out of his mind. I crunched some numbers last night. If you take out the one game 4 against San Antonio when he struggled, that's the only bad game he's had. In the other 5 games, shooting 55% from three-point range, 55% overall, just absolutely lights out on target. Draymond, though, is probably the Warriors' MVP so far, almost averaging a triple-double. And again, doing what he does on the defensive end as well. And these Pelicans, I do think they're in pretty serious trouble right out of the gate. Part of it is Draymond's versatility defensively has him unlocked again when it comes to that free safety role that he loves to play. Then they've thrown Kevin Durant on Drew Holiday, and that length and athleticism is something that is very different and a lot tougher for Drew than what he saw against Portland in the first round against guys like Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, Evan Turner. And so with New Orleans, the problem quickly becomes, you know, if they can't get something past Anthony Davis and basically Drew or Nikola Mirotic, then it's a shootout. And beating the Warriors in a shootout, they're both fast-paced teams, it's just not, it's a losing proposition. So I think the Pelicans are in trouble after one game.
Sam Amick joining us. Sam, go back to that point about Kevin Durant. I mean, we know Kevin Durant is all world, one of the best to ever do it. We know offensively the guy's unstoppable. But defensively, I mean, I'm stunned that he can do what he can do against Jrue Holiday. Holiday is listed at 6'4", Durant listed at 6'9", but the guy's really is closer to 7 feet. How in the world is a guy that big able to have the kind of quickness to stay with and shut down a guard like Holiday?
It's just the freak of an athlete that Kevin is. I mean, here's, you know, it's funny you strike up a memory, Jim, of when I talked to Drew going into this series. I had gotten his game plan on the Warriors and what he thought of, you know, essentially how they looked without Steph Curry. And what's interesting is I focused on the idea of Andre Iguodala being the point guard, Sean Livingston, guys like that, Draymond running the offense. And ironically, Drew had highlighted Durant even on the offensive end, but his point was, he's like, Kevin can be a point guard. Like, the guy can do everything. He's basically, you know, a one or a two in the body of a four or a five. Obviously, he's very slight, but in terms of height and length, the guy is just incredibly long. And I went back and broke down some film on that game. And, listen, Kevin had help. It was Kevon Looney. It was other guys, Klay Thompson, Draymond. But in terms of setting the tone, Kevin kept up with Drew. He came through pick and rolls. And that arm was always getting in Drew's way. And so you got your line of vision, your sight affected because Kevin's always in your face. And we'll see. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be adjustments in game two. But game one, that certainly worked.
Sam Amick joins us. Well, in game two, you might get Steph Curry. Looking at this, Sam, what is a realistic expectation for Steph if he returns in game two, considering it's going to be his first game since early March?
We shall see. I chuckled today when I saw my friend and colleague Mark Spears at ESPN. I talked to Steph, and he had a quote about his expectations saying that he just didn't want to suck, which I thought was a pretty good way of putting it.
Right.
He's probably not going to. The only, probably the most applicable, you know, sample or like evidence that we would want to look at is when he came back from the MCL injury a couple years ago in the playoffs. They're in the second round against Portland. And he goes off. Now, I remember he had a really, really slow start. He was pretty bad for most of regulation. But late in the fourth and then overtime, as you remember, Jim, he just absolutely takes over. And that was when, you know, he was fired up and he kind of yelled at the crowd and said, I'm back. I think that gets forgotten because by the time the finals came to an end and the Warriors choked up that 3-1 lead, I think there was a cumulative effect when it comes to his knee and he wasn't fully healthy. But in the beginning, he got off to a pretty hot start. I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case tomorrow. I think he's probably going to look like a pretty decent version of himself.
We're talking to Sam Amick for another couple of minutes. Sam, before you go, Utah ends Oklahoma City season, potentially Paul George's time in OKC. So when you look at that series, what kind of an impact might it have on George's decision?
Tough to tell. I mean, I feel like you can flip it two ways. You could obviously look at it and say, okay, if you're Paul, now you're worried that we couldn't even get out of the second round. Now you've got, you know, 2 months to think about your future, which, you know, in terms of free agency, that's what the team should always be afraid of. Don't give these in the training room scheming about what they want to do next. But the other aspect of it is that Paul was so bad in that final game that maybe it kind of leaves him hungry and makes him want to come back and figure out how to take it to the next level. I don't know which way I would handicap it as far as where that, you know, what happens here. You need to remember he's been incredibly positive towards the Thunder all the way through. Like, I think far and above, this is not politically correct stuff. This is Paul George saying that he is a believer in their culture. He's a believer in Russell Westbrook. That obviously does not mean he's not going to seriously consider every other option. And, you know, and that's what even he, I think, doesn't know yet, is how is he going to feel when he's in the room with Magic, when they are putting that blueprint on the table for Lakerland. Or, you know, maybe some other scenario pops up that we haven't even thought about. So I don't know which way it goes, but obviously getting bounced in the first round does not help the Thunder's chances.
Rick in Buffalo. Rick, what's going on? How are you?
I'm doing good, Jim. And I realize what's at stake, but I'm going to press my luck. A few final thoughts on the NFL draft. I'm not going to pretend I know anything about Josh Allen. I've never seen the dude throw a pass. I'm just hoping the Bills brass did their due diligence and picked the best guy for this franchise. But even more than that, I'm hoping for a good old-fashioned training camp fist fight between Allen and A.J. McCarron. got to be honest, Jim. I'm just looking for some action and entertainment. And let's be real about the NFL draft. It's nothing more than a complete crapshoot. For every Troy Aikman, there's 10 David Carrs. For every Ben Roethlisberger, there's 20 Jake Lockers. The only draft certainty every year is there's going to be a stadium full of 75,000 D-bags cheering for players they've never heard of. I'm sure Raider Mike had front row seats. And how nice it was of Leffen Laguna to check in after I smoked him out a couple weeks ago. But does it really count as a call if all he did was regurgitate year-old takes on Ice Cube's Big Three League? What's wrong, Lef? Another writer's strike in Southern California. But I do agree with one thing you said. Things definitely come in threes. And your three-year run of smack-off gimmicks is over. I know you're gripping right now because you finally realize you're going to have to rely on straight smack to win this year's crown. And we all know how that's going to end. In an epic battle with Vic for ninth place. Nice knowing you, champ. War the dawning of a new day for the Buffalo Bills. War Josh Allen being the franchise quarterback this city's lacked for the last 20 years. Thanks for the vine, Jim. I'm out.
Rick in Buffalo, Rack and Malvi. Cruz won his first NHRA race since 2014. Did it in spectacular fashion this weekend, so the jungle karma was real and it was in effect. And he lobs us a telephone call right now from Charlotte, North Carolina. He is the jungle's fastest clone, and he gets himself a big win for himself, his team, and the jungle. We go to him right now. Cruz, brother, what's going on? Tremendous Monday to you. How you feeling?
What is up, man? It's awesome. Appreciate the love, brother.
You tell me all about that win, Cruz. That's your first win for yourself and for the team since 2014. It's got to be so sweet. How does it feel?
Jim, after you mentioned, you said it all in your opening there, introducing it. It was like, okay, 4 years ago is a long time. It was 92 races since we won. I heard that in the media room afterwards. And let me tell you, it felt surreal to me. In fact, even today, I woke up several times last night. I was just like, man, if I'm dreaming, I'm going to be pissed off. But it was an old-fashioned ass-kicking from the back. You know, we raced John Force. And the thing about this particular race, Jim, is it's a four-wide. In other words, you have to beat three other cars, not just one like normal. So, and we, you know, it was the best of the best. It was just out of 20-some cars, it was just four left, and we got the win. And so, like I said, big win. We're feeling the jungle karma, Jim. I when you mentioned that to me, when we talked, when I was in studio a couple of months ago, we talked about jungle karma and all. And it's like, you know what? I'm feeling it. And had so many fans come up to me and talk about, hey, you're going to be on Jim's show tomorrow and stuff. So it's really an honor to have for you to have us on here, Jim. And this is the jungle's first motorsports win. So I'm happy for the jungle, and I'm happy for our team.
Hey, Cruz, we're celebrating this thing right along with you and your team. And speaking of your team, not everybody on that team was there when you last won. Not everybody on that team had experienced an NHRA win before. So given the hours that these guys put in, given the sacrifices they make for you, how happy were you for them to get that win?
Well, that's exactly right. You know, much like a football team, you know, you change players out. We are in the land of free agency, so we got guys from other teams trying to pick guys off of our team, just like they do in the NFL. So we've had to reboot, and actually there's like four guys on the team that had never been on a race team this year, but they had put in the hours, the long midnight, 1 o'clock hours with, you know, putting the car together, and we damaged some bodies this year. And so for them to experience that and then to come full circle and within six races of the season to be in the winner's circle, these guys were acting fools, but you know what? Hey, it was when you win, these races are so hard to win, Jim. I've been lucky to win almost 40 of them, and it doesn't get any easier. You know, there's a lot of money behind these other teams, but just like with all sports, you know, they're all trying to do the same thing. So when you can win one of these, man, you need to celebrate, let your hair down, and let it rip. So we're gonna enjoy the moment, enjoy the week. We have a race coming up this weekend in Atlanta. But, you know, we feel good about the car. I mean, the car performed, let's put it this way, of the three, of, you know, all three events, we were the first in all four lanes. So, because if you come in second, you still advance. So, heck, I raced one. I beat one guy three different times, and I'm thinking, man, the odds of that is pretty tough. But, hey, we overcame the odds, Jim. And really, my team is kind of more like the, you know, we're like the little engine. You know, we're a smaller budget team, but we're fighters. We scratch and claw, and it's one for the little guy, and we're still making a difference.
The jungle's fastest clone, Cruz Pedregon, gets the win for the first time since 2014. Cruz, you said we're going to enjoy this one, we're going to celebrate this one. So after a win like that, what's the adult beverage of choice?
We had everything flowing here. We were not bashful. It was mainly beer, but I'm glad I didn't. You know, I know enough. I'm a veteran at this. I know enough in the euphoria of the moment, the win. Man, you're younger. You just drink anything in sight, but you pay for it the next day. So I kept it with beer. I think I was drinking three or four different brands. One of my guys had a sombrero on and a winner's circle hat on and a bottle of tequila in the other hand. I thought this guy's going to not be feeling it. He's not going to be feeling good the next day, but. It was, like I say, it was just, when we come back from a win, we do the winner's circle, all the photos. We have to come back and put the car away. In other words, we have to bring the car back in, lift it up on the jacks, do all of our service work. So I told my guys, I go, hey guys, you had a couple beers. Let's be safe. Let's put the car away. And then after that, you can let it rip. But we were actually partying so late last night. It's like one of my favorite sayings, Jim, is remember that sideline of Mike Singletary when he goes, I like that kind of party, baby. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. You know it. You know it.
That's one of my favorite sayings. So anyway, huh?
Go ahead.
So anyway, we're going to do a team dinner tonight and let the guys, you know, last night it was late. We're all dirty and tired. So, yeah, tonight we're going to do a team dinner. But, hey, the celebration will continue. And the way I look at this, sports is about pressure. You're always under the gun. And sometimes pressure cannot be the best thing when you enter an event. You're not loose. You're not. So I think this win is going to loosen our team up, including myself a little bit, where we can kind of just let it happen. And because, you know, it 4-year drought with sponsors to answer to. It's, you know, you've got to produce. And I think this meant a lot to Snap-on, Toyota, some of our main, you know, our primary sponsors. So it's good for the wallet, but it's also good for the people that support our team.
It's good for everybody. Cruz Pedregon getting the win, and it's good for my man Caleb Cox, who's picking us up too. Cruz, enjoy that one. I know it's back to business, but the jungle is all fired up about it. So thank you very much, man. Great job, and I know we'll talk again soon.
Jim, it's an honor, man. You're the best.
Good night now.